I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And as always, wherever you're listening from, thanks so much for joining me. So before I introduce today's guest, I just want to mention again that I am kind of thinking of changing the show format slightly. I still want to talk about spirituality, but I want to move more towards topics that are kind of proven. Like if there's an energy healing modality that's come out, there's actually been evidence that it works and it's been tested using the scientific method rather than just testimonials from people. So I really would love your feedback because this show is about you. My intention for the show is really to help as many people as possible. And the way that I can do that is if you tell me what you think would help you the most. So please do email me spiritualshow@gmail.com, or you can get in touch with me on Twitter, Marie Bernard, or Facebook, or go to my website, spiritualshow.com. So again, my email address is spiritualshow@gmail.com. And just please send me your feedback or your thoughts about what works about the show or what you'd like to see, what changes you might like to see. Otherwise, I'm just going to make it up on my own, which is fine too. But I'd love your input. Thank you so much. So today we are speaking with Audrey Siegel. Audrey Siegel is running for COPE City Council in Vancouver City Council through COPE. And it's interesting because the show before mine, Language to Language here on CITR, mentioned her. I was just standing outside waiting for my show to start and I heard them say Audrey Siegel. And I was like, oh, I know Audrey because we actually lived together for a couple of years when we were teenagers. So I'm super happy to have Audrey on this show. And Audrey is a Musqueam band member. She's not a spokesperson, but she's very passionate about, well, lots of different things. We're going to find out all about it. Welcome to the show, Audrey.
Thank you, Marie. It's so good. It's so good to chat with you again.
Yay. I totally want to catch up and everything. But tell me about now, it's interesting because living in foster care,
yeah,
as we both have a background in, there's been like a lot of life is rough when you live in foster care and it takes some time. And I remember quite a few years ago, the last time we spoke, like many people, we were both going through some struggles and it seems like your life has just changed so much. I mean, you've always been this vibrant person, but it just seems like you're on this path. And so I'm wondering what shifted for you?
What shifted was about 5 years ago, I decided that I wasn't going to wake up and willingly, knowingly, with all of my energy put on this shame and guilt suit of being an Indian, of the residential school experience that my family has survived from my grandparents through to my mother's generation. And I started to, I took the course, the UBC Musqueam Collaborative Language course that's taught here on the reserve. I decided to learn my language because I thought I need to just be who I am and I just need to love who I am. First I need to accept it and then maybe one day I can actually love myself. And everything started turning around and I just let go of so much. And I made room for apparently for me and the work that I needed to do to find the path finally that I'm meant to be on.
Wow. I love that. And it's so exciting. And the first thing that I notice when I look at your Facebook page is this sense of community that you seem to have found.
Yes. I have found, when I first came back to my community, there were a lot of open arms and a lot of open hearts and a lot of encouragement and people who were just happy to have me back. And they had their own similar experiences of just being unsettled in who they were. So I
didn't have to explain anything. And then I worked in our language and culture department for several years and helped to do work revitalizing our language and our culture, because the two are so inextricably connected. And I really gained an amazing sense of appreciation for who my ancestors were and how we lived, and that we didn't have a written language, and that all of our information that needed to be transmitted had to be done through the words and through the actions. And it gave me a whole new way of thinking, and it helped me to feel even more connected to my people who've been here since the first sunrise.
Now, Audrey, when you say that your people didn't have a written language, is that something that you're working on, or is it still passed through oral traditions?
No, we've had to adapt an orthography to represent the sounds in our language, because we have no fluent speakers. We haven't had any fluent speakers for at least 15 years, and we are working off of recordings and transcripts with a few people who do speak the language but are not fluent. So we are working with the First Nations Language Department, especially primarily Pat Shaw, who's just an amazing, lovely woman and one of my mentors, and she's just a superhero. So we're working with her on so many different things to bring our language completely back to life again.
All right. Well, I want to talk about your roots and all of that, because I can hear the passion, but I know that there's other things that
there's
you're passionate
so much.
About. And so let's also, because I want to touch on this throughout the hour, people in radio kind of tune in and tune out. So I want to really remind them. Now you're running for city council with COPE.
I am.
Have you, on the Facebook page, it looked like you were looking for nominations. Have you been officially nominated yet?
Not yet. That happens on September 7th.
Oh, so very soon. So if people, how do you get nominated? People have to be members of COPE?
People have to be members of COPE, and they have to have been a member for more than 30 days before. They have to have been a member since August 7th. And at the nomination meeting on September 7th, I need 50% plus one, I believe, of the 500 people who will be there to vote for me to be able to run for city council under COPE.
Wow. Okay. So if you are inspired by what Audrey has to say, you like what she stands for, and you are a member of COPE, or you know someone who's a member of COPE, then you can think about attending this on, again, September 7th?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can provide you with more details as I'm aware of them.
Okay. And I'll give out your contact information. What's the best way if people have specific questions they want to ask you to get in touch?
Audrey Siegel, all small, one word, at gmail.com.
And that's S-I-E-G-E-L?
A G-L.
S-I-E-G-L.
Yeah.
S-I-E-G-L. Okay, awesome. We will give that out again throughout the hour. I'm just making note of it. Okay, so now I notice, what are some of the things that you're going to want to stand for when you're running for city council?
Oh boy. Okay. So the three main issues that I would like to speak to are the homelessness crisis that exists in primarily the downtown east side, but in Vancouver as a whole as well. And the fact that this forced displacement continues of the poorest of the poor, and in the name of progress, in the name of more money. And it's not only is it unacceptable, it has to stop, and it has to turn around, because people, our inherent rights to be respected and treated as a human being with dignity and respect has to be restored, and that has to start on all three levels of government, on issues like homelessness, one thing, on the murdered and missing women, on the ongoing abuse that is supported and condoned by our government, and all across Turtle Island. I mean, look at the case of the poor 15-year-old back east in care. We both know what it's like to be in care, and how many times, even as a kid in care or as the staff in the group home, the kids come home just to run away, and every night you're just hoping that they make their way to somewhere safe, and this and that poor innocent girl did not. So, and that Harper Keith thing. We're looking into it. It is being treated properly. No, that's a lie.
And is that, so that's your second platform?
Yes, and then the third is Aboriginal title, like having the first people of this land, and I'm looking on an international scale as well. I want the Indigenous peoples of each land around the world to have their rights to be acknowledged and supported legally and every other way possible. We were stewards of this land, and we managed it so beautifully before other people came and started to interfere. And now look at what's happening. Look at what happened with Mount Pawley. Look at down in California, what's happening. And my friend was just telling me that a new report came out about the fish. Well, no, the fish are safe. The fish aren't dangerous to humans, but they're finding high levels of mercury. I believe it is in their liver and in their gonads. So the fish are safe as long as we don't eat them, and the water is safe. It's just that the fish have this problem. It's just these incongruencies. So when we, the First Nations people of the land, managed things and were stewards and making sure that everything went properly, we didn't have these problems. And I fully recognize we can't go back to the way things were before, but we have to have our voices and our rights heard and upheld, because we will protect this land.
So it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you're looking for more collaboration between the First Nations people, who really, like you said, were stewards of this land and have a valuable insight into mm-hmm. how we can move forward.
Exactly. It has to be, and it has to be an inclusive process of how we manage the land, how we manage our resources, our water, our air, all of our resources, how we manage our court systems, how we manage the way that this country that developed on the land of all the First Nations people, how this country is run from the highest level down to like the closest, most municipal level. The First Nations have to be involved and included, and the leaders every step of the way.
Wonderful. Okay, so these are the three issues that you're mm-hmm. most wanting to focus on. So it's the homelessness crisis, which we will talk about.
Yep.
The murdered and missing women, it sounds like, not only in Vancouver, but across Canada.
Yes, and the continued violence and abuse that is allowed to continue against Aboriginal women, okay. primarily.
And then also the Aboriginal title, you said you want more collaboration and really to be taken seriously, because it seems like right now we just kind of, the government really paid, I mean, look at the Olympics, it was First mm-hmm. Nations art all over, and really how much say did you guys have in anything?
As far as I know, it was pretty limited. And to be fair, I'm not very educated on the topic, but it is a step in the right direction, but we need to keep taking more steps, faster and bigger.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay. And so if you are interested in these topics and you want to support Audrey and you are a member of COPE, then you can go to the annual general meeting?
It's the nomination meeting.
Okay, so there's a nomination meeting on September 7th. If you're a member of COPE, you probably already know the details around that. Or if you know someone who's a member of COPE and they've been a member for at least 30 days and you're in support of this, maybe let them listen to the interview. You can go to citr.ca to hear the recording of it, or my website, spiritualshow.com, and check out the past episodes if you want to pass this on to someone else. Okay, so let's talk about the homelessness crisis. Now, I've seen a lot of pictures of you down at Oppenheimer Park, if I'm pronouncing that right. They mm-hmm. are, there's a tent city going on, and they've been kind of shut down and then they're back. So what's going on with that, and how are you supporting those people?
Well, I believe we're on day 50 or 51 at Oppenheimer, which started with a very late night phone call from some local people from some locals who do a lot of work and live in the area, that a group of people who live in the park, because they have nowhere else to be, were handed 24-hour eviction notices. So 7 in the morning, the city parks board would be coming with flatbed trucks, and if the people didn't leave, they would be forced out or arrested, and their few possessions that they have left would be loaded onto these flatbeds and taken to the dump. So instead of dealing with the actual homelessness issue and the multiple issues that lie underneath it, which are where we really need to be affecting change, they were just going to kick them out and move them on again. Like during the Olympics, they just housed them in different areas and hid them. Well, part of the way that I live is that you don't hide things. You drag it out into the light and you let it sit and let people adjust. And then we figure out how to move forward. And these are unpleasant topics, but just because it's unpleasant doesn't mean that these human beings should be left to live with rats crawling on them while they sleep, which is what I have seen. So now 50, 51 days in, we're still there. In the first week or so, they gave us 2 more eviction notices. They had the police around us, fire department, and they used intimidation and bullying. That there has been a stop put to that. There are a group of people who sit once or twice a week with representatives of the city, Parks Board, VPD, VSD, BC Housing. We need provincial. Oh, and then second... that I cannot remember his name right now. He is second in command under Penny Bellum, the city manager. He seems like a really good guy. But effectively, nothing has really been done. 20 people have been housed, which is the direction we want to go in. But we need more action and we need it faster. We don't need to find out if the city will be able to buy a building and get it ready. By September is when we would find out, and then it would take time to make that happen. And the fixing up of the SROs is a minimum 70 to 90 day process, looking realistically at all the paperwork and everything that needs to be done. So that's looking at maybe another 90 days in the park for everybody who's there who doesn't have anywhere else to go. And as I touched on earlier, the underlying issues for a lot of the First Nations people there, which there is an overrepresentation of First Nations people in care, in the courts, in jails, in downtown, in homeless people, SRO shelters in the downtown east side. And a lot of this is directly a result of the residential schools. My family has been down there for 3 generations in the Pacific, in the Empress, in the Ivanhoe, up and down Granville Street before they shut all those SROs down in the late 80s and early 90s, I believe. And there are ongoing issues with abuse of alcohol and drugs, but really it's abusing ourselves. And the reality of living in these addictions is less painful than dealing with the real issues that are underneath. And in the year of truth and reconciliation, how many, there are 2 recovery houses for youth that the funding has been cut off. And these are generations that are still affected by the residential school after effects. So this is ridiculous that these human beings are allowed to live out there like that. And again, forced to feel alienated and even worse, invisible. My entire life, I've struggled with feeling worthless, like I don't even have a right to exist because I'm an Indian and because I'm a woman. And I don't accept that anymore for me or for anyone else. So I use my voice and I say, no, this isn't right. We have to fix this. And we stood in solidarity with them. We put up a longhouse, which usually sits in my backyard. We put up a sacred structure to mark that as sacred land because it is sacred land. All of this land is sacred. And that comes back to the whole issue of, you know, of sovereignty and our job as stewards of this land to take care of the land and everybody who lives on it. So it is all connected because you have a lot of women down there who, if they didn't have this community that is forming, they would be out there on their own. So I'm not fooled for a second to believe it is a safe place to be, but it is a safer place to be with our camp there. And at last count, which was over a week ago, there were 164 tents, and the number's growing every day. So this needs to be addressed now.
I just want to clarify, in case people are not aware, you were using the term SRO. Now, these are
single room occupancy.
Okay. And yes, so in the downtown east side, if you're not familiar, there were all of these hotel rooms that were just, I guess it was like one little room and then there'd be a shared bathroom and all of that. So not really much of a living space, but at least somewhere that you could sleep for the night that was covered, was cheap enough for people living on welfare to.
And some of the biggest issues with the SROs is that they have cockroaches, they have rats and mice, they have bed bugs. There's toxic mold. A lot of them, the rooms have a tiny window that faces a brick wall that's only several feet away. And then you add to it, again, the rampant use of alcohol and drugs to try to deal with ongoing issues of neglect and abuse. So people are self-medicating, and this is non-stop in these buildings, and there's no peace, there's no quiet. When I am lucky that in the last a year and a half ago, I was able to rent a house on my reserve in my community. I've been on waiting list for already over 10 or 15 years, and it's probably going to be at least another 10 years. And, in my home, I have peace. I've been able to make an actual home for myself, and I leave the park. I'm at the park every day, and I leave there as a firekeeper Tom said. I leave with a lump in my throat because I get to go home. I get to go find my peace, and people down there don't have that.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many. Things I want to ask you and questions. I mean, this is just such a huge issue. It is time for a break, so maybe we can take a moment and just think about where we're going to move next with this, because it's such a huge topic. All right, so this is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I am your host, Marie Bernard, and we will be back with more Synchronicity in a moment.
The 12th edition of the Latin American Film Festival is taking place from August 28th to September 7th. More than 70 films from all over Latin America will be screened over the 11 days, with Chile as the spotlight country. For more information, visit vlaff.org.
The Westside Community Food Market is back every Thursday at 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. from July 3rd to September 25th. A stretch of sidewalk at 8th and Vine will be turned into a local food market. Join us for hyper-local foods, live music, coffee, and more.
Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, RX Comics, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, the Wallflower Modern Diner, and Woo Vintage Clothing.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the Sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
Are You Aware Radio, alternate Thursday 6 to 7 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM. Profiling music and musicians take the route of positive action over apathy.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking right now with Vancouver resident Audrey Siegel, and she is a Musqueam Band member. She makes it clear that she's not a spokesperson for the Musqueam Band, but she is running for City Council through COPE. So she's seeking a nomination right now. If you're a member of COPE or you know someone who's a member of COPE and you really connect with what she's saying and what she stands for, she's looking at the homelessness crisis, the murdered and missing women, and Aboriginal title, and having a collaboration between Aboriginal people and the government so that we can solve these problems. So if you connect with that, then check out COPE, and you can get in touch with Audrey at Audrey Siegel, S-I-E-G-L, at gmail.com, and that nomination day is September 7th, 2014. Welcome back to the show, Audrey.
Hello.
Yay. So we were talking now about homelessness, and there's a lot of, it really comes down a lot of it to economics. I mean, this property now on the downtown east side is, let's face it, it's valuable. It's waterfront property. And people are being pushed out just like they were in expo time, because no one wanted tourists seeing homeless people, drug addicted people on the streets. Same with the Olympics. And now people are being pushed out more as condos are being built in this area. So what do you think specifically, obviously more housing, but what are some of the steps that Vancouver government can take?
First and foremost, we need to fully acknowledge the truth of the situation. We need to have the entirety of the situation, because you can't deal with something if you don't acknowledge it. So the city's trying, the city, the government, and to that end, a lot of people in society are trying to avoid looking at this issue of homelessness. So to me, that is a huge step of just saying, okay, so this is how it is. And it's not a judgment thing. It's just, this is the crisis situation that we're in. And then we need to stop this, the building of the condos downtown with the absolute minimum number of houses, of suites to accommodate the actual existing residents in the downtown east side who have budgets for rent of only $375 a month. And a lot of the SROs have been renovated, and then the rent is raised and the people who were living there are forced out. So not only are there people being forced out, but the new places that are being built don't have even a tenth of the numbers of suites available to house those people who are now displaced. So we have a number of different issues happening that the SROs and shelters should not be a main way to deal with our homelessness issues in this city or anywhere in the world, literally. So fixing up these shelters and SROs so that they are clean, safe, and that people feel comfortable there, so that when they need, they have somewhere to be. But creating, as I've said in the media so many times, safe, livable, and affordable homes, permanent homes for people to have before we start accommodating new people moving into the areas. How is it that people who have more money, and this is a real indicator of what matters, people with more money are being accommodated literally at the expense of the existing community members in the downtown east side? Mm-hmm. And that is just, it is not acceptable. This is the last refuge. A lot of these people don't have anywhere else to go. Mm. So now we are at this awkward point that everybody who was in this park, there are a few, there's a small percentage of the people who are in the park who have homes and are staying in solidarity with the people who don't have homes and to support. But the vast majority of the people who are there actually do not have a home or are in an SRO that is so infested with bugs and cockroaches that living in a park is actually safer, cleaner, and preferable, which says a lot for the condition of these buildings. So now that the number is growing every day and there's no way to house all of these people right now, which if all of the levels of government and the representatives who needed to be present were present when this first started, it wouldn't have gotten as bad as it is right now.
Now, I hate to say this, but it's a fact that unless people can connect to how this actually impacts them, mm-hmm. people are not going to be that inspired to get involved. I mean, a small amount of people who are really empathic and big on human rights are going to get mm-hmm. involved. But for the general population, it's not my problem.
Exactly. And the other reality is that most people are really only a few paychecks away from having to look at what are they going to give up. If they have a car, will they give up their car? Will they, first things to go, because I'm in this situation myself right now, having to let go of
things like a home landline or cable, and use your vehicle less or don't use it at all because the insurance, the gas, and the maintenance is too much. And then you have to cut back on your groceries. And if you have a pet, usually the pet tends to get more food and better food than you will set aside for yourself. And then you have to start downsizing your home and finding somewhere cheaper to live, which in the city, which we have almost a 0% rental rate right now, it's not possible. So in the reality of Vancouver, where the dollar sign is the most important, it really isn't a stretch of the truth to say most people really are only a few paychecks away from homelessness themselves. And the cost of, you know, we're requiring more police and different, we're organizing, and we've had, Carnegie has sent outreach workers and social workers and different things like that to the park. This is all costing more money. It's costing more for the city and the province and the federal government to leave this how it is than if they would have just moved in and dealt with this when it first started, or even better, if they would come in and start putting real solutions into place so that we don't have this issue of homelessness, it would have been ideal. But right now, it's starting to cost everybody more money.
And that's the thing. I mean, this is really a societal issue.
It is.
Because the people who, I mean, if you are homeless, even if you're not already addicted to drugs, the chances of you needing, I mean, people on the street need to stay awake all night because it's not safe. So then they start using crystal meth.
Yep.
Where they might not have been had a drug problem before that. So, I mean, even the issue of homelessness causes all of these other problems. The expense is so huge. I mean, I heard that a shot of Narcan, which is if you've had an OD, is something like $800 a pop. So ambulances are down on the downtown east side dealing with overdoses all the time. So, I mean, this is a real expense, even if you don't actually care about the human problem, the mm-hmm. story of these individuals. It's just practical.
It is practical that Vancouver has a huge amount of the city's income generated through tourism. Do tourists want to see what is happening here in Oppenheimer? Because, you know, we have homeless people living all over in greater Vancouver area, in the endowment lands, under the bridges, under the viaducts. We have people living in Stanley Park. We have people living in doorways and in alleys everywhere. The only difference with Oppenheimer right now is that the majority of the people who are there, well over 90% of the people who are there in that park, who are genuinely homeless, they were somewhere else. They were just sleeping somewhere, maybe in a group of two or three, but the majority of them were off on their own. All of these people already existed as homeless people. The only difference is that we are now standing together and united to say, look, this is just a drop in the bucket of what of the numbers that are really represented down here.
And I just saw an article in the newspaper the other day, and it's not just people who were living downtown in the SROs. I mean, even right now, school is about to start at UBC, mm-hmm. and people are having a hard time finding even a shared accommodation. I mean, to get a room in a house in Vancouver is what it costs to get a whole one-bedroom apartment a few years ago.
Exactly. I had a girl from UBC ask if she could, she's looking to live in somebody's backyard because she was going to live in the forest in her tent out at UBC, and that is not safe. So she is looking to live in the safety of at least a backyard, and can afford to pay a small amount of money and trade, you know, work, yard work, housework, anything like that. But she was actually, I didn't know that there was such a crisis going on out at UPC for the students, and she brought it to my attention, this young 20-something-year-old girl who's willing to live in a forest in a tent just so she can continue her education, because there is nowhere else, again, nowhere else for her to live.
Well, and she has to be applauded for that, because when I was 19, 20, trying to struggle to pay rent and go to school, I just gave up.
Mm-hmm.
I had to work because, you know, I couldn't do both. And some, well, I don't know, some people are able to work three jobs and go to school full time. I don't know how they do it.
I don't know how they do it either.
They're superhuman. But for the most, I mean, and just imagine the issue of where am I going to live? How am I going to afford to eat? I know plenty of students who live off like Mr. Noodles.
Yep. And thank God for the food bank on campus.
Yeah. And but how are you able to, I mean, when you don't have proper nutrition, when you have an improper sleep, when you don't, you're worried about just basic living, you don't have the same cognitive functioning. You can't make the same kinds of decisions. Learning goes down and even just conflict resolution, all of these things. I mean, it impacts every level of society when people don't have their basic needs met.
Exactly. And you look even at, you know, in the big picture, it's not the biggest issue, but for an individual, it can be a big thing. If somebody's living in a tent in the forest, they can put a lock on their tent, but it doesn't take much to break the lock or to get into that tent to steal or to look and see what does this person have. So textbooks are expensive. Tablets, computers, clothing to replace all of these things is probably not even possible. And for a girl to be sleeping out there on her own in the forest, it is not safe. I mean, it's not safe for women to be walking around campus in the dark on their own. And that's why there's the safe walk and different programs like that that happen. So again, the preying upon of women and the biggest tool used against the marginalized in Vancouver is poverty. It was a very effective tool used against the First Nations people, and now it's just being used against the bigger group of marginalized people. Because if you keep people poor, and everything you pointed out, the diet is affected, the sleep is affected, the cognitive abilities are affected. So all of these things then help to keep these people where they are, and then the government can keep doing what they're doing to fill their own pockets and to sell our resources and our land, and then continue with the whole message that we don't matter.
It's such a, I mean, there's just so many issues where we really, one of the things that we talk about on this show so much is the oneness of all of us, how we're all connected. If one person is suffering, we might not feel it directly, but we all suffer. We all pay the price for what happens to other people.
Exactly.
And so Audrey Siegel is our guest today. She's a Musqueam Band member. She's not a spokesperson for the Musqueam people, but she is a spokesperson for herself and for women and people who have been, I'm totally at a loss for the words. She's running for city council through COPE. So she's seeking a nomination through COPE right now. If you are a COPE member or know someone who's a COPE member and you are feeling a connection to what she's standing for, you can vote her in. You can nominate her in September 7th. And if you have any questions for Audrey directly, her address is Audrey Siegel, S-I-E-G-L, at gmail.com. That's Audrey Siegel at gmail.com. You also have a Facebook page, right?
Yep. I have my own Facebook page, and there's a page for my COPE nomination.
Okay, so what's the best place to find that?
I'd probably just Audrey Siegel, AudreySiegel, and the first thing that will come up is me in my blanket with my headband on, smiling at you. That'll be and that's my main page, and I can I can't access other messages on Facebook through my phone, so I check those every few days. So I may take a few days to get back to somebody, but I do respond to all the messages that I get.
All right. Thank you. Okay. So we only have a little bit of time left. So we've talked quite a lot about the homelessness crisis, and I mean, we could really talk about it all day. This is just such a huge issue, and there's so many intricacies to, you know, prevention to fixing the problem to all of this. But let's talk about the issue of Aboriginal title.
Yes. 2 years ago, just over 2 years ago, people in my community, we heard that just down on Southwest Marine near the Arthur Lang on-ramp, there was going to be a condo developed on four intact, unearthed remains of our ancestors. Two adults and two children, full skeletal, intact remains. And the women in the community banded together, and we were there before the construction crew got there in the morning, and we stopped them. We prevented them from entering the site so that they couldn't do any more damage to that site, because that area is that village was is called Sistam, and it is more commonly known to the rest of the world as the Marpole Midden, the Great Marpole Midden, and where the Fraser Arms is built and everything on down to where the Wild Coyote used to be, for those of you who remember the Wild Coyote.
I
That is, there are remnants of one of our villages there, and already 700 to 800 graves were removed to accommodate the buildings that are in that area. So for us to be able to stand in protection of these four ancestors who have been there for who knows how long, at least a couple hundred years, up to over 10,000 years. So we stood there, and after 3 days, the province caved and said, okay, we'll negotiate. So we left, and nothing happened. I believe it was a month or two, and nothing happened. And the permits, the city kept issuing the permits to develop and do all this work on the property. And we hadn't been able to have proper access to go in and do our own tests. And so then all of these things finally happened. We were able to do our tests, and we just put ourselves there, and we did not leave. Now, after the second round of coming back and setting up, we stayed for over 200 days.
Wow.
And this is where, and now, I'll try to follow an order to, I'm trying to put the information out in a way that's easy to take, because there's so many different offshoots of what happened at Sisnam. So after more than 200 days, we, the Musqueam people, were successful in buying that land back. That land now belongs to us, and we are able to protect our ancestors. We are now able to do the work that we need to let them go back to rest. And even the day when we were given permission, we had to ask permission and be granted permission to go on to the property to rebury our ancestors and do the work that we needed for those ancestors to go back to rest. It was so heavily supervised, only six people allowed on the lot at a time. And it was so condescending and insulting the way that we were treated at that time. But the big picture was that we needed to take care of our ancestors. And we did. And the way that we were treated was supported and condoned by the way that this government works. Because the reality and the truth of the situation is that this government was set up by and for the people who wanted to eradicate the First Nations people of this land. And that still hurts. And when I look at the fact that my grandparents, my mother, my auntie, all my uncles, my cousin, who's only a year or two older than I am, all went to residential schools. My mother was taken at 4 years old, forcibly removed from her home, as all of her siblings were. And she was kept for 12 years. And my grandparents were forced to watch their children come home every season when school was over, and then they would have to go back. And every season when the kids came back, they were more damaged in ways that are unfathomable. And the damage that did, that I don't know how my mother's generation is going to find their own healing. So now my job is to use my voice. And as my mother has asked me and given me full permission to discuss everything she has shared with me, that it happened before, during, and after the residential schools, to get the truth out there. Because our education system, our media, our society does not want to look at this. In fact, they lie and cover it up every chance they get. And this ties directly with what happened at Sisnam, because the same thing has happened there. It was deemed a heritage site a World Heritage Site in 1933. So why were there permits given to develop on this land where it is a known archaeological site and grave site? So now we own the property and we stand in protection of those ancestors still. And I was always so ashamed of being an Indian, and a lot of this comes from the trickle down or the intergenerational effects of the residential schools. So I grew up learning a lot of our teachings and different medicines with my grandmother, because I helped take care of her since I was a very little girl until she passed 12 or 13 years ago. But I was never involved in our singing or dancing, our big house. I was never given a name. I was never taught a lot of the aspects of our culture that help us to find our strength and our pride in who we are. And there at Sisnam, under the on-ramp to the Arthur Lang Bridge, I picked up a drum and I started singing for the first time in my life. And that was not even 2 years ago. And now this is a huge part of what I do every day to heal myself, to be able to let go of the pain that is mine and the pain that I carry for my previous generations of ancestors. And the drumming and the singing, the drum is the heartbeat. The songs are our prayers, and we send them a lot like the Buddhist prayer flags and the spinning of the wheel and the lighting of the incense with Buddhism. The prayers go out and they go to where they need to be. And it's a feeling of doing good. It's a feeling of not just being a victim and not just being pushed around and having our voice stripped of us and further alienation from our communities. So the reconnecting of communities, whether it's under a bridge, whether it's in the middle of a park in the downtown east side. I was on the caravan that went to Ottawa to break the coppers last 4 July 2027th, I think it was. And again, stopping in each of the communities and igniting hope and them sharing their hope with us for better days. It's an amazing thing. So every day I sing my songs, I do welcomes, I go and I speak about my personal experiences at being First Nations, at being a woman, at being a resident of the downtown east side. And everywhere I go, I bring my drum and I bring my songs, and it is healing for me, because I was hearing your show is about spirituality and things like healing and connection. So for each of us to find our own way to do that, learning my language, having my feet on the land where my ancestors were. Everybody needs to do this. Everybody needs to be around and hear the language that their ancestors spoke. If there's any way, put your feet where your ancestors walked and feel that connection and feel their energy, because they're there and they want us to succeed and find our balance, so that we all have to be here and we all have to exist peacefully. There cannot be this totalitarian type of control that especially this Harper government is exercising. The balance has to be put in place. And there are positive examples that this is possible when you look at the fact that we, the Musqueam people, stood together as band members. And we stood there and we now own that property, and we were able to achieve our goal of protecting those ancestors. And for me to say in public that I'm going to sing this song, or this is my experience and this puts the truth out there, but I didn't realize how much it meant to other people who were feeling the same way I was, who were also looking for their way out of the darkness.
Well, that is so inspiring, Audrey. And I want to bring it back to the September 7th nomination meeting. Now, you said there's going to be about 500 people there?
Yes.
And you need 50% plus one person. So yeah. I know that the First Nations population in Vancouver is definitely a minority there. Mm. And so how can we connect this to other people of other ethnicities, people who are into consumerism, into capitalism? How can we tie this back to why they should nominate you if they're members of COPE?
Because I've been connecting with the Chinese community, particularly in the downtown east side as well, because Musqueam has an ongoing relationship and history, a shared history with the Chinese community, because here on our reserve, we had Chinese market gardens for quite a long time until the 1960s. So I've been connecting with them, and I've been going to different rallies that I go to, connecting with people from all over the world, like Palestinian people and people from Gaza and from South America who are feeling the same thing. Because at the end of the day, the truth of the matter is that what the government has done, through what this government in Canada has done to the First Nations people since inception, it is going to carry on and do to everybody, slowly stripping of people of their rights. You see what's happening on the Arbutus Corridor. People are really upset, and justifiably so, that the government is just coming in and taking pieces of their land where they've built beautiful gardens to nourish themselves and their souls and their bodies and their communities. And because people stood by and let it happen to us, it is now possible for it to happen to everybody. By standing together and protecting the meekest of the meek, the poorest of the poor, the most broken people who need the most support and healing, you are ensuring a future for yourself that these things are not able to happen to you. From an entirely selfish standpoint, helping these people who I'm using my voice for, including myself, I say these people and I include myself in these people, because I have lived in poverty. I have lived through an abusive relationship. I have lived through surviving the after effects of residential school. I have lived through being literally hunted down and stalked by men since I was 12 years old. I know what it feels like to be segregated and alienated. And if you stand with me, you are helping to make sure that these things don't happen to you or your own children. Mm-hmm. To me, that just seems like the common sense way to approach people who need a context to understand how this affects them.
Thank you for that, Audrey. And if, because people can't, I mean, they can join COPE at any time, but if they want to be able to nominate you, they have to be at least already a member for 30 yeah. days. So non-COPE members, how can they support you?
Non-COPE members can support me by standing in unity and in solidarity with initiatives and topics like homelessness, women's rights, Indigenous sovereignty and title over the land, that we can all stand together and work to create, I don't just mean in the New Age way, but healthy, functioning relationships that take everybody into consideration, not just the few people who have the money and are now dictating how the rest of the population lives.
Beautifully said. Well, it's almost time for Parts Unknown. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you, Audrey.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
I'm so happy to connect with you again, and I look forward to chatting with you more on air and off.
Thank you. And so I'm just wondering if there's a thought or a main point that you really want everyone to leave with today.
Yes. We have a phrase, Nantaminam, which is the Musqueam language, Natsamat Tishkwaluins. It means we are of one heart and one mind. And when we make our way to that being the absolute truth is when we actually are able to move forward with strength and truth and light and peace that benefits everybody, whether they're aware of it or not. As you were saying, when one suffers, everyone suffers. When one prospers, we all prosper. So let's all work together. Let's all work to become one, because this was how we moved forward before, and it is how we will move forward again. And I have no doubt of the success of any of these topics we've talked about, because it's the way it has to be. And so many good people working with their own good energy and time, we can't help but succeed, and we will do it together.
Thank you so much, Audrey. It's just
Thank you.
Been such a pleasure, and I love your passion, and good luck. Again,
okay, Haichka.
Haichka?
Hi, Jeff. Thank you. Thank you in my language.
Thank you very much, Audrey. Okay. And if you want to get in touch with Audrey, it's audreysiegel@gmail.com. Her last name is S-I-E-G-L. And she's running, looking for nominations with the COPE party. And so that would be on September 7th. So if you have been inspired by this, please consider nominating her or pass it on to some other COPE members. You can find the recording at citr.ca or spiritualshow.com. And I just want to thank Audrey again. Thank you for listening. And I just want to send you lots and lots of love. I love you so much. Be well. Namaste.
stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca. Join the Mount Pleasant Neighborhood House on September 27th from 12 to 6 p.m. in celebration of the diverse Mount Pleasant community at Metamorphfest 2014. Enjoy a fun-filled day full of live music, an interactive art walk, and many activities for children, seniors, and everyone in between. Sponsored by Van City Credit Union. Considering studying abroad? Visit the Study and Go Abroad Fair on Saturday, September 27th at the Vancouver Convention Center East Wing to meet top universities from around the world offering postgrad, undergrad, and diploma programs abroad. Visit the Travel Zone for volunteering, language programs, adventure travel, and work abroad. Expo opens at 1 p.m., but come early at noon for our feature seminar on scholarships. Admission is free. Check the website for more info at studyandgoabroad.com.